Mayor Don McCormick. The Kimberley Community Choir, a season or two ago, sang a song called Kiwanawangipi. It was thank you for the water. It didn't thank anybody in particular. It was just thank you. Well, we don't have to talk about the flume anymore. But in the world at large, water is said to be the next oil in terms of that which you just can't get away from as a huge issue on every front, whether in Flint, Michigan, or in the Sahara, where you can't get to any water. Why would I mention that in terms of Kimberley, sir?
Well, the fact is that water supplies in general, and certainly the one in Kimberley, there's a certain degree of fragility to it. And I don't think generally people understand that, you know, one small change can have a major impact on what you've been used to for a very long period of time.
And this isn't different really in its own way from what we talked about last summer when we were worried about not enough water during the summer.
Right.
Well, this is a continuum, and yet it's even bigger issue.
Well, it is. Last summer we were talking about something we couldn't control. You know, which was rain, you know, kind of the water events that we have to ensure that our reservoir and everything is full. The issue that we have right now really is it's about our watershed and about activity, in particular logging that's happening in the watershed that may, or depending on your point of view, may or may not have a major impact on the water supply here in Kimberley.
And it's significant logging. I mean, you can watch it.
Yeah, these cut blocks are not they're not small. They are relatively large. What's interesting, so I guess, first of all, we have a watershed committee. And the committee is made up of a number of stakeholders, all of them stakeholders in our watershed or something to do with our water supply or the watershed, including the city of Kimberley. BC Timber Sales, who are the loggers in the watershed, are also part of that committee. So over time, there has been this give and take with respect to the logging that they have licensed for within the confines of our watershed and the interest of our water supply. And the give and take over time has more or less worked. There's no question that any logging in that watershed, you have to ask yourself why.
There are a lot of other places you could cut trees.
There are many factors in there that are beyond our control at this point, that are just long periods of time. They come over, you know, they're part of the legislation.
The provincial legislation?
The act, you know, the Forestry Act. There are things in there with respect to behavior of the foresters and things like that that we just don't have a degree of control over right now, that we're set at a different time and place. And here we are in, you know, 2016 with some issues that are in front of us. So we have some constraints that we're working with, but at the end of the day, it's all been working more or less well. No pun intended on the word well. However, I guess the first fact is that of our watershed, the Mark Creek watershed is really big. And of all the logging that has taken place over time, it's impacted about 9% of the watershed. So when we talk about these big cut blocks, it's not like huge chunks are being taken out of the watershed, you know, each time. So for us, it's less that logging is happening there than where the logging is happening. And so recently, there's been a change of management within BC Timber Sales. And whenever you have a change in manager, there can be a change if the handover doesn't happen. You know, I'll use the term correctly, and I'm not making a judgment anyway, but if the handover isn't within consideration of what's gone before, changes can happen that cause, you know, people to get fussed. And that's exactly what's happened here. And it's a result of two things that are two planned cut blocks that are part of their 5-year plan. So it's not like this is the 5-month plan, it's over the 5-year plan. One is a cut block that is immediately adjacent to our wetlands. The wetlands are the natural filter for the water that ends up in the reservoir, that ends up in the creek, that ends up coming out our taps. And if you've got, you know, a clear-cut large block of cutting that happens next to the wetlands, there is some risk associated with the impact that that's going to have on our natural filtration.
And we now know these things. This isn't just science, folk wisdom.
Yeah, no, science, has caught up to, kind of the things that we are doing that, impact us. So, yes, we do. We know this for a fact. So that's the first thing. The second is that there are another number of cut blocks a little further out that are immediately above the reservoir. So we're already known to have a lot of glacial till in this area. In the springtime, when you see the turbidity in our water, you appreciate, exactly what we're dealing with there. And the grade, up above that reservoir is extremely steep. So when you combine lots of till with the grade, clear cutting, and you take a look at freshet, the snowpack melting, or you take a look at any heavy rain events we might have, it all has some serious impact or potential for serious impact on our water supply.
Big time.
And so the consequence of that is not just, kind of dirty water in the spring. The consequence of that is having to put is interior health causing us to put a filtration plant in place to deal with these issues. So in essence, what we're saying is that the recent changes to that cut plan, it's like shooting ourselves in the foot with respect to our watershed. So it's not just that they're happening, it's where they're happening that has got everybody fussed. So there is a method of dealing with this, and we have triggered that process by filing what's called a referral. And that referral basically is a communication back to, through the authorities to BC Timber that says, we're in disagreement with what it is you're doing. We need to talk about this.
Does that stop anything?
It stops, exactly. It stops the plans that are in place until we have a negotiated agreement.
It suspends them.
Suspended. Canceled is not the right word. Thank you, Bill. It's suspended. Until we have an agreement on an outcome that both parties feel is fair and equitable.
And can we err on the side of fair, equitable, and cautious for those of us who live here and need the water?
Our watershed committee, their job is to stand guard over that. And in the past, sanity has prevailed. And the expectation is that sanity will prevail here again. But again, it was changed. The plan was changed without knowledge of the watershed committee. And that's what caused this to, to be such a, a topic of controversy right now.
It's also worth saying that, we tend to think of this as a binary. Either it messes up the wetlands or it doesn't. We either get runoff or we don't. But this is incremental. Mm-hmm. And the tendency is to say we pass the spring season and we survived it and we'll live happily ever after. But this is an incremental process. I don't know what kinds of silting problems there are in the reservoir, but presumably at some point that becomes a serious issue, both in terms of quantity, but also in terms of lots of other things.
You're absolutely correct.
So this is a cumulative process. That needs to be addressed, and the committee seems like a reasonable way of addressing it. The other thing that leaps to mind, of course, is some time back we had a little go around about trucks coming through Townsite, which didn't get my attention, though I thought it was a little bit annoying. Until what I read as a threat. Building roads through our watershed, which I thought was graceless, tactless, and
inappropriate
and rude. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me to be part of this same process that we're dealing with. You'd like to be dealing with rational, civilized people who can make decisions that ultimately are, let us say, optimal for the community, the total community, the economics, the full range, the environment. And it sounds like we may be in a more challenged position than has historically been the case. Is that what I'm hearing now?
That's probably a fair comment. I think things become more challenging the more you know. So the more knowledge we gain, the more challenge we have. Which is true. And I think that's, as we continue to go forward, we will, continue to be challenged. My big concern about this, notwithstanding, the environmental impact and the specifics on the water, the fact is that we can throw a filtration plant at it if the problem gets big enough. I mean, in its crassest way, that could happen. The problem with that is the cost of doing that to the community is humongous, anywhere from $15 to $20 million, if the technology available today can deal with the kind of silt, the kind of glacial till that we get, you know, with the with the flows. And there is some debate about that, the technology that is typically used today is going to be stretched. And if that's the case, the costs, you know, just mount again and again. So there's two issues here. One is the issue of really destroying, you know, what has been a history long, it's the word I'm looking for. It's, we've had a luxury. It's a history long luxury of natural water coming into the community, naturally purified water. I mean, this is the dream. I mean, you see commercials, espouse the wonderful water in the mountains.
Well, and you work toward that. You don't destroy it.
And Kenny Dodd will be very upset if you destroy his water supply.
Well, there's no doubt.
We put in a whole house water filter because I don't particularly like chewy water, and there are times of the year when it can be kind of chunky. And I thought when we got through the freshet, and had to change the filters out, that everything would be fine. And it's not. There is the fact that you can see it some parts of the year suggest that when you can't see it, it's clear, and it's not. Right. The silt is again, it's invisible.
Until it clogs up your filter,
or until you start actually paying attention to it. This is a non-trivial concern.
Well, in addition to which, as an American, I can say this, it is not pretty to see what looks a lot like big corporations in the States. It would be big corporations saying, we're going to do this, period, paragraph, when there's so many other complications and, frankly, life issues. This is water we're talking about.
Well, it's true, Paul, and I guess the big issue here is the change in behavior, because up until now we've had a very, you know, symbiotic relationship with opposing, you know, goals and or objectives, and it's the change in behavior that's a little bit troubling. I have no doubt that through the process that we're going through here right now, we're going to come to a solution that is going to be right for the community and also for BC Timber Sales. But the change in behavior has caused us to say, whoa, you know, we're on fragile ground here, and the consequences of this are extremely high. Now, it's not up to us to determine whether we've crossed the line with respect to the quality of our water or not. We have Interior Health that is an overriding body that's riding herd, and all the testing that's happening, we have been going through deferral requests pretty much every year. We need to do that now. We need to go to Interior Health with justification to defer a requirement to build a filtration plant. We're getting that close to the line. So it's not going to take an awful lot to push us over the edge where we're going to have to say, you know what, we're going to have to spend a lot of money to make this happen.
Which gets us to the other subject, near and dear to your heart, budget. And obviously, if you start looking at that magnitude, then everything else is up for grabs. Roads, clearing roads, building roads, surfacing roads, all the infrastructure in the city is under threat if we end up having to spend that kind of money. You're in the middle of the budget process.
Yeah.
How are we doing?
Well, so fair comment. I think what it would do is just add another layer of complexity, you know, to what already is a relatively complex thing for us to be, you know, to be managing these days.
You mean the budget itself?
Yeah, because realistically, the 15 to 20 million, I mean, we've got, you know, the grant process, and, you know, so the community, in fairness, wouldn't be footing the entire $15 million bill, but we'd be footing probably $5 million of that, which in and of itself is still a very large number.
Well, and presumably maintenance and operation is also not trivial in that.
Which is an excellent point. The capital cost is one thing. Being able to, you know, add the operating cost is another. And when we're going through the budget process, we have to look at both sides of that equation. And it's been a year that this council has been in place right now. Last budget term, we didn't have a lot of... We were halfway through the budget process by the time, you know, council got its feet planted on the ground. So this particular one, this budget's on us. You know, we've had a year to be able to contemplate, to be able to plan, and be able to get our priorities in place. So this is a really important budget. And, it's a difficult time because we've done, we meaning the municipality, not just this council, but previous councils, have done things a certain way for mm-hmm. such a long period of time, both from an operational and from a cultural point of view. Making the change into something different is an extremely difficult thing to do. And we're grappling with that right now, not just as a council, but more specifically, Scott Somerville, our CAO, and his senior managers. This is a really difficult deal for them to be doing right now, because we've said there are no sacred cows this time through. We have to take a look at everything and start to do things differently. So when we say that, we don't mean we're going to quit spending or we're going to cut, just to lower taxes, because you can't do that. You to be a progressive community, you need to still spend, you need to invest, you need to be building on things in the community, but in a way that the community can afford and is in keeping with the general lifestyle of the community that, you know, that everybody is here to enjoy.
Bill used to say in our own businesses, he would say, you know, the best way in the world to save money is just turn the lights off, close the door.
Thing to do, but you can't. That's exactly right. So for like a good example, let's talk about roads. You kind of, with the lead in, let's talk about that, because it is probably the single most visible piece of infrastructure that taxpayers see on where their money goes, or as the case may be, is not going.
Mm-hmm.
And
visitors. It isn't just the taxpayer.
And for visitors, exactly. When you come into a community, the state of the infrastructure, and specifically the roads, is a marker for the health of the community. It's a perception that's created when you come into town. It's also a perception that's created for taxpayers and people who live here when you drive on our streets. So it baffles me as to why it's the last thing that gets attention. And when cuts come to in budget time, when you have to cut projects to kind of shoehorn what we have to spend, roads seem to be at the top of the list on the easy thing to cut. And this is not a good thing. So one of the things that we're proposing, and this is a long-winded way of getting around to, but one of the things that is going to be coming to council here very quickly is a three or four year, I think it's going to be a 3 or 4 year paving plan. In fact, it's not a paving plan, it's a roads plan. Mm. Because we can't just pave. We have to think about the water and sewer pipes underneath before you put the fresh, you know, asphalt on top.
Some of which are leaking for the last 100 years.
So we're going to have a roads plan over the next 3 or 4 years. And the proposal is going to be to borrow what we need in order to make that plan come to fruition. And fortunately, through frugal fiscal management, our debt at the city of Kimberley is relatively low. We haven't gone out and borrowed a whole lot in the past. In fact, the past 2 years, the flume borrowing and the sun mine borrowing represent more than 50% of the debt that the city has. So we're in pretty good shape.
And also, we're saying this is a time of very low interest rates.
And we need to be able to take advantage of that. That's exactly right. So it's kind of like the perfect storm coming together from an infrastructure point of view to be able to actively deal with an important piece of that in the community. So we're going to have to invest in that, and servicing that debt over the next 10 or 15 or 20 years or whatever it's amortized over is an incremental expenditure. So we can't just go back to the taxpayers and say we've decided that we have to increase your taxes because we're making this incremental investment without, that could be true, but without going back to where we're spending our money today and saying we have to find efficiencies here to be able to pay for these things. And so we're going through that entire process right now, and it's painful. I won't lie. It's an extremely painful process. And I think that, as a council, we have to come to grips with the fact that we are going to have to make some difficult decisions. They may not be popular, but they are decisions that we're going to have to make nonetheless.
And in some ways, and listening to you and going back to something we were talking about before we started, the budget is the in a way is the mirror for the community. It mm-hmm. tells you what the whole community looks like. It is a way of setting priorities. It said, this is who we are, this is where we want to commit our resources, these are the things we're going to let slide. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, it's more than just the dollars and cents of it. It really reflects who and what we are.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's very well put.
Part of who we are is a community set on being welcoming. Mm-hmm. And it would seem to me a lot of these things that you're talking about fit very nicely into my current,
well, not passion?
Exactly. Yeah, I was going to say obsession, but passion is better. The fact that we are a community that thinks ahead in terms of big issues. I happen to be very interested in the refugee resettlement group. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that we have lots of things overlapping here as we're thinking about what kind of a town are we, city? What kind? What are our priorities? How do we begin to address the big things as well as the little things? And how do we learn from all of this? Mm-hmm. Doesn't that all come together?
It does. And
in 30 seconds?
Yeah, well, I think that you know, our focus as a municipality needs to be creating the kind of environment, creating the frame, providing the framework and creating the environment that enables all of these various things to happen. There has been a tendency in the past for people to come to the city and say, this is your responsibility. What are you going to do about this? And what we do about that is look at creating frameworks and creating environments. And to the extent that we have a very flexible environment in place, we allow all of these wonderful things to happen. And I don't think we're where we need to be. If you look at people coming into the community, love it. And people are moving here because it's a wonderful community. But if you peel back the covers and take a look at you know, the what's there, you know, as far as an infrastructure and a direction, we still have work to do. There has been a tendency, I think, in the last 15 years or so since the mine closed, because a lot of money went away with that, is to look at things year to year. And we're trying to take a much longer view of what it is we're doing in providing that kind of infrastructure. And whether that's for wonderful social causes like the resettlement or economic development or anything in between, we need to be able to have an environment flexible enough to handle all of these things.
Well, this is a leap year, so you get an extra day in February. I'm sure by the time we talk again in March, you'll have it all figured out.
Yeah, thank you, Paula. I wish.
Break
but,
a bit.
But I will guarantee that we're making headway and we're listening to what the community is telling us.